Freddy, will you sign in? K2RAW.
Yes, Roger.
You're signing in because you have a question or a comment, Freddy?
Question.
Okay, we got you on the list. Not to worry. At this time, we begin the technical net. It's a gathering of people who are curious. I want to know more about wireless equipment. How does it work? How to make it work? As I said, how does it work and how to make it work better? The main purpose of the technical net is education. And that's the reason why we meet at this time. And people sign in because they've got a question or a comment. They sign in by giving us their call letters, their name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. A typical sign-in might sound like this, W-E-2-R-Y-Y, Joe and yes. So do we have any check-ins at this time? Give me your call letters and name, K2LIW.
Yes, good evening, Dick. This is Kilo 2 Charlie X-ray, Steve, and no.
Okay, we heard you, Steve, checking in. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters and name right now.
KD2JF, Chris, no.
Kilo Delta 2, this is Sarah Yankee, Andy, no.
Okay, Kilo Delta 2 Yankee, we got Chris, and we got Steve, and so far only Freddy's the only one that's got a real question. Anyone else, give me a call letters and name to check into the TechNet.
TQXH, Pat, and no.
Okay, we got Pat. Anyone else to check in because they do have a question or a comment? Give me your call letters and name and the word yes right now.
WS2N, Paul, with this evening's space report.
And that's Paul, who's going to later be giving us space report number 165 of the series. And this is TechNet number 1572 of the series that began in September of 1982. Anyone else to check in because they do have a question or a comment for the net? Give me a call letters right now, K2LIW.
One other, Margaret. I think they stepped on you. I heard you, but I don't think anybody else did. Why don't you go again?
Yankee Alpha 2, Yankee Bravo Zulu, Margaret, no?
Yankee Bravo Zulu, we got you. Anyone else check in because they do have a question or a comment? Give me your call letters right now. Looks like the only question we're going to get tonight is from Freddy. I keep forgetting the prefix of your call. I think it's WA2VBN, and I think you're in Far Rockaway, so go right ahead, Freddy. Give me your full call. Mr. VBN, K2RAW, I'll be listening.
This is KB2VBN. I want to know, what is the new radio frequency for DMR? I just discovered it today. DMR, what does that mean and what kind of transmission do they do?
Oh, Freddy, that's a big secret. Let's see if we have some of the DMR expert people, which is usually Bernie, K2 Yankee Oscar, if he's available. And maybe Eric, KE2EJ. If either of those guys are available, they're going to tell us about DMR. So the DMR experts out there. And I think another one is Rich. Rich Sir. I'm having trouble thinking of his call letters right now. Another DMR expert. So is there a DMR expert that can answer Freddy's question? Please sign in right now. K2RAW in the TechNet listening. Eric, you're giving us quite a bit of feedback right now, but you sound good. KE2EJ, K2RAW.
Hi, K2RAW, K2EJ. Feedback. DMR stands for Digital Mobile Radio. DMR stands for. It's actually a protocol that was invented by the ESTI, which is the European Standards Organization. And It is marketed in this country known as Moto Turbo. The Motorola folks decided to take that standard and enhance it a bit. Basically, it's UHF, VHF, like we know, used in analogs. The transmission standard is called P4FM. You can get into that if you want. And the codec, or the vocoder that they use, is something called AMPE2. It's a method of compressing your voice in 6 kilohertz worth of bandwidth. So the channel is 12.5, but in DMR you're going to have two voice channels going simultaneously. K2RIWK2J.
Yeah, Freddie's first question is what frequency is it on, RF frequency? And second of all, I've got a question, Eric, and that is, because my understanding of DMR is that it breaks everything up into packets of a few milliseconds each. It is a kind of time domain multiplex. So transmitting and receiving can take place seemingly simultaneously as far as the operator is concerned. In reality, the transmitter is flipping back and forth between transmit and receive every few milliseconds. Does that mean a DMR contact is possibly operational in full duplex mode? In other words, a little bit like a telephone. As you're talking to the person, they can be talking back to you at the same time if you're properly equipped. Is that possible with DMR, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. Well, the frequencies are published. Limewire uses 449325. There are quite a number of repeaters around the UHF band. If you go to DMRMARC at DMR-MARC.net, I think it is, it'll give you a listing of all the DMR repeaters all around the world and give you lots of good information. DMR was not intended to do full duplex. Yes, it's possible, but it doesn't operate that way. Transmission bursts 20 milliseconds with a guard band in between. And the way the system operates is TDMA, or time division multiplex. It actually has to get literally a sync signal, a training signal, from the repeater so that it knows when to transmit. RWK2J.
That's some darn good information, Eric. Since it's transmitting 20 millisecond chunks, I guess three of them at a time, in other words, one of those 20 millisecond chunks is transmit channel number one, the second one is transmit channel number two, I'm speculating, and the third one is a receive channel. So correct me on that. It sounds to me like it is capable of doing full duplex. And since there is, from my point of view and John's point of view, a lot of advantage of doing full duplex, I'm wondering why various people have not intentionally equipped it that way to do that. Question number one, and question number two, if some of those time slots of the TDMA are doing transmitting and receiving, if you're not receiving for full duplex, then what is the receiving doing? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. Well, the reason why it doesn't do full duplex concept-wise is that you have two simultaneous users speaking to having two simultaneous different conversations at the same time. The two time slots, when it's organized, and one time slot will be organized with a certain type of talk groups. The other time slot will be organized for another certain kind of talk groups. And talk groups are really an address, if you want to look at it from a digital standpoint. The purpose is to increase the channel capacity of your 12.5 kilohertz instead of having one person having a conversation. You have two people having two simultaneously different two-way conversations. When the 20 milliseconds goes by, that would be transmitting on, say, slot number one. That opens the next 20 milliseconds of the time where it's not transmitting, that somebody can transmit on slot number two. That's the way DMR is organized. There are other formats that are similar, but don't divide the channel up into two distinct channels. to be used by two distinct. So instead of using 6.25 kilohertz, they use 12.5 kilohertz for the one voice channel, and it's normal two-way that you think of in terms of analog. Concept of splitting it up gives you more capacity. Not intended to be used as a full duplex operation. Intended to be two simplex operations, two repeater operations, you want to think.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Your timing was good. Two distinct time slots of 20 milliseconds each, if I understand correctly, is the popular mode or popular protocol. I'm kind of curious, is there a protocol that could be selected that would be three or four time slots? Because even with the guard band between those time slots, you could have three or four and still have real-time audio, if you know what I mean, by way of those particular packets. I wonder, are there other protocols like that, or am I dreaming here, Eric? K2EJ, K2IW.
Yeah, well, you're kind of not taking math into consideration. In the 20 milliseconds, you can only pack so much data, because you've only got so much bandwidth. And in the other 20 milliseconds, you can only pack so much data. And if you wanted to pack more data in it, you'd need more bandwidth, so there's your limitation. You're running the audio at about 3600 baud, if you want to think of it as a serial stream. So one 12 kilohertz channel is pretty much capable of 9600 baud. Divide that by two, add some FEC, and you don't got much left. Go ahead, Dick.
I do have a couple more questions, but Hal says he wants to add something to this. Wonder how much DMR you've used with your experience, Hal, and how successful was it? Do you like it? K6DPZ, the man who usually gives us the very brief answers. K2RIW, go ahead, our celebrity, go ahead, Hal.
I have done some tests on DMR, but I just wanted to say I'm going to be here just to get the quickie answers. I don't use a repeater. I'm taking a Yarnus from Limark. But if anybody needs some fast answers on technical information, I still want to share my knowledge with anybody who wants it, Dick.
Okay, I think you're saying you don't use the repeater for the time being, Hal. Are you making an exception during the technical net? In other words, you will use the repeater to give us an answer during the technical net. Is that what you're saying, Hal?
Yeah, Dick, that's basically it. I don't want to be voting off the repeater for my Earthman attitudes and my vulgarity, supposedly. So I chose to just say, this is important enough that if I could have people out technically with the fat answers, so be it.
Yeah, I think you are mobile, Hal, and you were dropping out 40% of the time, but I'm pretty sure we got the message in between those dropout words. When it comes to DMR, which became operational, I guess, by way of primarily your effort, Eric, after the last Dayton get-together, I believe that's where you obtained the equipment, because you've got many contacts there at Dayton. And soon after, I think when you came home from Dayton, within the next week, you installed it. It is my belief that a very large number of the Limark members, maybe 130 or so, signed up to be qualified or to be authorized for a DMR transmission reception. And of those, I'm going to guess, 50 or so actually went out and bought equipment, and some number of those, maybe 30 or so on the average week, are actually using it. As you can tell, I'm guessing at the numbers here, Eric, and you might have a little bit better data than I do as to how many have been authorized and how many are really using it and how many have equipment. And so from what you can tell, it's going to be here to stay. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Oh, I don't know if you read the Limark, but Bernie has a last count of how many people we have that now have IDs with you. We have 380 members in the club with 350 people, 126 IDs issued. As far as I know, well, activity, from what I put it up, there was a lot. Because everybody went and got their radios. I would say 30 is kind of on a high side number. Through the last month of the summer, people were on vacation, so the usage was down. But it's beginning to pick up. Ask me next week, and I'll tell you traffic we've got going. But it's in the process of increasing, but it's kind of small at this point. But we're hoping it grows a lot. K2RWK2J.
I think that follows a typical plan, a typical scenario. In other words, it's a slightly exotic mode compared to normal ham radio. It's a combination of analog to digital converter, digital transmission, time domain, multiple access, packets being transmitted, 20 millisecond packets. So there's a fair amount of sophistication here. So it's a little bit on the elite side, and therefore not everybody's going to go for it, but a certain group, hardcore group, is going to be there. And from what you hear, they're reasonably pleased with it. Since you're front and center on this installation and its maintenance, Eric, you may be able to make some rough guesses as to what area is being covered. If I was in western New Jersey, I think I would have trouble getting into the DMR repeater. If I was in Montauk Point, or if I was in Riverhead, I think I would have trouble getting into it. Give us a rough guess as to the range. In other words, is it covering the vast majority of Nassau County and a little bit of western Suffolk right now with its current location? And are you envisioning any changes of antenna height, transmit power? I know you're working on, for instance, a vast exotic switching network, so you could add an afterburner if you wanted to. And so that brings up the question, is it uplink limited or downlink limited? But roughly, what's the range right now from your current experience, Eric? KE2EJ, K2LIW.
K2RW, K2EJ. Well, you know, if you're on VHF, you're going to do better than you are on UHF in some circumstances. There's a couple of things that go on with DMR, and that is, this is something that essentially sounds and looks like noise. Noise kind of will be a problem with the repeater. So the repeater itself has a threshold at which it doesn't want to listen anymore, and you try to set that number above whatever the impulse is, impulse noise that you're getting at your particular receive site. The coverage is not quite equal to what you're used to in analog. I mean, we have a cliff effect too, just like you have in digital television, where is it, at some particular point, you just disappear. Even with the FEC in there, you get to the fringes, you start getting packet loss, and you can hear it, and it makes for, like, a bad cell phone connection. So, go there.
Digital television, for instance, is very vulnerable to co-channel interference. We've been getting quite a few band openings in the last couple of weeks. Barry N2MB has been really appreciating the way 6 meters and 2 meters has been opening essentially each individual day. I do notice that when there's a band opening on 6 or 2 meters, and sometimes on 450, my channel 2 television over the air broadcast disappears. The converter just says a weak signal or no signal present. And sometimes, like during today, there were portions of the day when quite a few of my digital over-the-air channels disappeared. So, since DMR is also a quasi-digital transmission and reception technique, I'm going to make some guesses that impulse noise could give it some grief, and co-channel interference could give it some grief. So, in other words, the vulnerability of digital over-the-air television and the vulnerability of DMR has a degree of similarity. That's a guess on my part. And please correct me on that one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2LIW in the TechNet.
K2LIW, KE2EJ.
The idea is to organize the, microphone down, which is hard because I'm going to speak loud now. All those things they're linked together, so, you know, I could be talking on the Limelight machine and talking to someone in England on one particular time slot and one particular talk loop, which is organized like that. So it's not as limited as just if you have a single standalone machine, and that's your coverage area, so there you go. K2RIW, K2EJ.
Even though you had to put your microphone down because you're mobiling, and you don't want to create confusion with the with law enforcement, that worked very well. You talked loud, and it came through very well, Eric. That's a good transmitter you're using there. When the DMR repeaters are linked, and you could be going into the one on Long Island, which I think is in Plainview, and I guess with the right codes that you transmit, you could be talking to somebody in London, England. I'm going to guess that that interconnection is an internet-like interconnection, so that it has some degree of similarity to Echolink or IRLP. How many of the Long Island users have used any of that remote hookup yet, or remote linking? Is that something that will be there in the future, or is it already enabled but not too many people are familiar with it? Give us a few words on the status of that. And so, at the same time, Eric, if you could, we on Long Island are now DMR equipped. I presume other portions of the United States, maybe the very progressive guys in California, beat us out by a few months. And are they also doing long-range linking? KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet. Thank you for all this information, Eric.
K2RIW, K2EJ. There are a bunch of predefined channels, so to speak, or they call them talk loops. Now, you got two time slots. We use time slot one for long distance stuff, whereas we have something called North America English. We have what's called Bronx of New Jersey Turbo, which is more local. We have a Long Island talk group, which is a Limelight talk group, which is essentially our machine, but it's also linked to a couple other machines. The layout and structure is considerably different than IRLP and Echolink, whereas that we have X number of these predefined channels. You use them as opposed to Echolink, where you can dial up an individual person, or as opposed to IRLP, where you can dial up a particular repeater in a location. Basically, the way this is organized, say, on North America, where you're supposed to make contact and move off to some other channel. And by the way, each channel is just a different preamble. It's like having a different IP address, even though you're on the same RF frequency. You have these predefined channels where you can make your contact and then move over to another place. Slot 2 is generally, or time slot 2 is generally used for local talk loops, where you're not keying up a couple hundred repeaters every time you key up. So, K2RIW, K2J.
Okay, lots of good information there, Eric. And Freddie is the guy who asked us this question about DMR. And I hope you got some of the answers you're looking for. And I think we're going to be asking each other more questions in the future. Let me first go back to Freddie to find out if Freddie's got some more questions on the subject. After that, I'm going to open it up to the whole net. Anybody wants to know anything about DMR, we've got one of the experts, KE2EJ, our local broadcast engineering expert, and the man who set up, who went and bought the equipment and set it up. So he's one of the right guys to talk to. So after Freddie, anyone else who wants to ask any DMR questions, I'm going to give you your opportunity to do that. So, Freddie, you started quite a discussion here tonight, Freddie, and I wonder if you got some more questions on your subject. KB2, VBN, yeah, the microwave voice of Far Rockaway, I think it is, K2RIW. You got it, Freddie.
It's Roger. The guy was telling me the DMR equipment costs about $150. I could talk to anybody in the entire world except for Alaska, he was telling me. And it's pretty good. You got nothing to say. Nobody could come in and jam the frequencies on that station.
Yeah, when it comes to the I call it authorization. I keep forgetting the right word. But you have to literally register yourself as to being a valid DMR user of this particular repeater for for instance, so I presume what a person does is to mail in or echo or email a request and present information like a name, address, call letters. I wonder, in fact, when it comes to the authorization process, give us a few words on that, Eric. What is actually required for a person to be allowed? And I presume that authorization includes a passcode, so to speak. A person is given a passcode, and then that's recognized by the machine, and then the repeating takes place. And without that passcode, without that recognized user, I presume the machine does not open up and does not repeat that person. A bunch of guesses on my part, Eric. So what's required for the authorization process? KE2EJ, K2LIW, the tech man.
K2LIW, K2EJ. Actually, there is an organization called TMR, which is the TMR Motorola Amateur Radio Club, that issues the ID numbers. The ID numbers are required by the radio. Your concept of it not having the right ID number that the repeater won't open up, that's not the case. The reason for it is actually more for the way the system operates, because it's merely a commercial system designed for commercial operations or police operations. Every transmitter has a unique ID number. We don't actually operate like that. We operate where the user has a unique ID number. And the reason for this is that this digital transmission method does not allow itself to be received by anything other than a radio that has the appropriate software and protocol in it. And for all practical purposes, the talk groups need to be published to be compliant to the FCC. You can't just make up your own number and make up your own talk group. You got to be published, so that way there is no secrecy. And DML radios are capable of doing encryption, but that's not allowed. RWK.
Very good, Eric. Some more good information. No matter how secure a system is, and poor old Mrs. Clinton is running into some problems right now with she had a private email system, and people were wondering whether or not it got hacked, and some of the government email systems got hacked. So was hers actually more secure than had it been a government system? It's an interesting question, but anything is hackable. If a person was really digitally savvy and RF savvy, and he hadn't gone through the DMR, MARC authorization process, and he therefore did something to his particular radio so that it could transmit DMR, that would be a fairly difficult thing, is what I think you're telling me, Eric. KE2EJ, K2LAW.
Okay, to transmit on DNR, you know, to transmit on a frequency that the DMR repeater learns easy. Whether or not you're transmitting the kind of information the repeater understands, that's another story. For the home brewer, there's a couple problems. The AMBD2 is a proprietary vocoder, codec. You could, in fact, use other types of vocoding, but the radios that are out there won't understand you. I mean, you could make up your own, and that would be fine, but we tend to go with things that are already in place. So, you could make up your own numbers, and that will get some things confused, because the numbers are allocated by region and by their use, so... Yeah, there's a lot of things that you can do to mess up. Don't forget, this was designed not for him. This was designed for commercial operations, where the radio company does all the programming and sets up the radios, and you, the user, don't have any access to it.
The DMR radios that Limark members are using right now, Eric, are there two brand names or five brand names out there? And, are there both Cadillac versions and Volkswagen versions? So roughly how many dollars for a brand new radio of either class? How many brand names? And is there a reasonable amount of surplus equipment out there? Since this is commercial equipment, could I buy something that had been used in commercial service, and it's on a slightly different frequency, and by properly programming it, could I buy a surplus half-price one, so to speak, and reprogram it so that it's on the right frequency, on the right mode for local operation. So, in other words, if I'm a brand new DMR desirable person, I desire DMR, if I go cheap, how cheap can I go, and how many brand names, and is there used equipment? As you can see the nature of what I'm asking there, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet. He's not giving us very much grief. You could just simply talk over top of him. It's your choice, Eric.
No, I
still
feel like cutting him off.
There are a number of manufacturers. The cheap ones are Chinese. Like I have a Connect system, which is cheap. Is in the $200. There's another company called QI coming out with a $99 version of the radio. There's a couple more. The station makes them. Icon, no, not Icon. Kenwood makes them. And of course, the big one is Motorola. There's a number of European companies. You would have a bit of a hard time finding. It's not impossible, but could in fact find them on mobile radios, starting at like $300 and foils of really $500 to $600. But you get the idea.
Yes, I did. That's a good ballpark. How about used equipment, Eric? I think you said if it's on eBay, most likely it's used. Is there a good history of people buying used equipment and being able to reprogram it? Are there a couple of minefields out there where certain pieces of used equipment are questionable and hard to modify? And when it comes to troubleshooting, I'm guessing you have the ability to troubleshoot DMR radios. I suspect the number of people who have that skill is small, but please correct me on that. KE2EJ, K2RIW, the TechNet.
Well, you gotta remember these things have only been around since like 2005, 2006. Well, actually, it's a little earlier than that. So as far as like used gear goes, it's kind of few and far between. They're all reprogrammable, that's not a problem. But don't get a lot of the public service, you know, like the police, fire, and that kind of stuff. It's in the upper part of 470 to 512, so radios are a little hard to bring down to 4.
That I can see. In other words, the synthesizer might not go low enough. The final stages and the intermediate stages would have to be retuned. So I guess when you're buying used equipment, I guess you'd have to know something about what service it was previously in. If it was in the 470 to 512 region, and you knew that that was a certain kind of law enforcement, I guess we should avoid that particular one. Which commercial services are more desirable where the frequency region is closer to us, Eric? And you might be a touchdown, and maybe I'm holding you from your next appointment. KE2EJ, K2IW, thank you for giving us all this info.
You're welcome, Dick. Well, it's a hard call. You have to know, or at least what service the video was. Not to say that you can't bring them down. You can. It's just problematic. You have to put software. Don't forget, these radios are really software-based. They're not hardware-based the way we think of it. Their hardware is, you know, a front end into an IF, after the local oscillator, and then into a D to A, an A to D, sorry. And going the other way, it's a similar kind of arrangement, so totally software-based, generating the output, putting the modulation, that kind of thing. All these radios will do analog, too, so it has the conventional stuff. It's got the reactors for making UFM, got the discriminator that's making audio in the end. So, really, there are multiple radios. One portion of it being digital, the other portion being analog. And same thing for P25 and Yaesu Fusion and D-Star. They're all similar, except the protocols are different.
When you go to a progressive meeting like the Microwave Update Group or the Central State VHF Society or the New England VHF Society, any of these groups, the words you hear these days among the really progressive guys is software-defined radios, SDR. Boy, that's taking over everything when it comes to digital processing of what gets transmitted, what gets received, and so on. I'm getting the impression that these DMR radios are a commercial version of software-defined radio. In other words, by way of the programming, you can make it do almost everything, except that you may be able to program the synthesizer to go to your frequency, but because you've moved it so darn far, a smart guy buying a used one might have to dig into that final stage, retune that final stage and the intermediate stage in order to get full power output. That's my guess on that one, Eric. So would you call a DMR radio the modern-day equivalent, commercial equivalent, of what the ham radio operators call software-defined radio? KE2EJ, K2LAW in the TechNet.
K6CZ0,
radio, but they don't, because it has one purpose and one purpose only. That's to generate them, and that is also to separate the data. By the way, you can send data along with the bomb. Separate the data packet or the voice packet, and then actually convert that back into what I call reasonably crummy audio. I don't particularly like the audio quality of DMR, whereas station 3 is like night and day, or even P25 is night and day. The amazing amount of difference that 3 kilobaud can make is amazing in terms of the output. Because of the compression scheme, it gives my ears very unhappy, because it doesn't have the harmonic structure that I'm used to using with my ears to listen. But for most people, they don't have a problem with it. But for me, as a person who has quite defective hearing, it's very difficult, and I don't particularly enjoy it, but I use it to talk to people.
Steve, T3 with the combat.
Yeah, I've got a further question on audio, but let me go over to Hal while he's there. K6DBZ, DBZ. I bet you've done a fair amount of work with software-defined radios. Over to you, Hal. K2LAW.
Dick, and the thing is, these types of radios, so try and move the front ends down. It's all off service mount and strip line, and unless you have some very precision ways of measuring the frequency, when you start to drop the strip line down, you go right past it. So it's not like years ago where you can, you know, pop something. Now it's a whole different ball game, Dick. Go ahead.
But not exactly true.
Yeah, the microwave guys I know become very skilled at something they call snowflaking. And so even though you have got exotic hybrids and frequency converters and transmission lines and fancy tuned operational amplifiers and so on, by way of snowflaking with a good vector network analyzer and spectrum analyzer, there are guys who have moved frequencies tremendous amounts. I didn't say it's easy, but there are people who have that skill. So you're going to give us a few words on the degree of the difficulty of moving, Eric, but my other question was, DMR audio, you're a little bit unhappy with the way the modulation and demodulation, digital and analog, the way it works and the way it sounds. The sound of DMR radio, the actual audio quality, are essentially all the radios and DMR service identical in sounding, or certain brand names and certain protocols a little bit better in audio quality? KE2EJ, K2LAW in the TechNet.
K2LAW, K2EJ, they all stink. At least the bit rate don't sound so bad. It's the nature of codec. Most of these radios don't have strip line front ends. They're up with helical resonance. Moving the front ends and the off part of it's not that bad. Big problem is the synthesizer. The way they set up the software and the firmware that runs in the radio, it only knows to go between what frequencies it is set up for. You can play games with like the Motorola's and modify the what they call the code plug and do stuff to it before you load it into the radio, but you can't suck it out and expect it to come back out. You have to know how to cheat, so to speak, to make the synthesizer chip go where you want to go. As far as tuning the output and the input, pretty conventional. It's not no magic. Like just a little earlier today, I took an LMB that was designed to run at 1.9 gigs, and I brought it down to 1.6 gigs by taking the metal and tacking it onto the tank of the oscillator to make it go a little lower. And then you don't have to do that kind of extreme in these talking about gigahertz.
Good information, Eric. Now, my experience with phase lock loops tells me the following. If I was designing the voltage-controlled oscillator for a phase-lock loop to go into a radio, that's going to cover the frequency region of, let's say, 470 to 512. I would take the middle of that frequency region, and that's where the voltage-controlled oscillator would have the most desirable characteristics. That would be its center frequency, so to speak. And by changing the control voltage to the reactor, I could move it up and down from that center and get to the low end of 470. And
yeah, before you go any further, can you hear me?
Yeah, I was about to ask you, can I plug in a new VCO module to get around that problem? Go ahead, Eric.
What I was going to say, especially the Chinese, they tend to use these big block VCOs like mini circuits, whereas they'll actually cover, the VCO itself will go where you want it to go. As opposed to what Motorola used to do with the 900 megahertz meters, band split, they'd actually have two different VCOs back and forth between them. From what I've seen so far, you don't need to change that part of it. They do the restriction pretty much for software.
So you seem to be telling me that that VCO on a radio that was intended for 470 to 512 megahertz service, that VCO is still going to behave very nicely down at the 445 megacycles, so to speak. Is that what you're saying, Eric? And I'm a little bit amazed by that. KE2EJ, K2LIW in the TechNet.
When I modified the 900 radios, I used circuits to oscillator that went from 720 to 930, I think it was. At that much range, very stable, very low phase noise. Of course, you know, phase detector that you use. And of course, the filter bandwidth. That was one of the things that I think they recommend when I was modifying those other radios. It depends upon how fast you want it to lock up. If you want it to use it for trunking radios, you've got to move pretty quickly. So there are the filters in your phase detector. It's going to be rather sharp and fast, whereas that if you don't really care, you can make it sloppy. Don't mind waiting for, you know, 20 or 30 cycles to lock up. Not a big deal. To do fast switching, then that's a whole other story.
I'm awful glad to hear this, because in the past, in the early days of phase lock loop radios, it had an extremely wide band voltage controlled oscillator capability. Its phase noise was usually kind of yucky, unless you happen to have a sampling rate of a phase lock loop that's super fast. But I think you're saying modern day good VCOs have gotten around all those problems. Okay, now's the time for you guys that want to know about DMR radios. Since we've got some experts on the frequency, ask your questions right now. Give me your call letters if you want to know anything more about DMR, prices, availability, how to use it, advantages, and so on. Give me your call letters right now. K2LIW in the TechNet.
WA2VDH with a quick question.
WA2VDH, recognized. And just to make sure we know everybody who's got questions, anyone else also want to go on the list for DMR questions right now, give me your call letters, K2LIW listening. Okay, Mr. VDH, you got it. WA2VDH, K2LIW. Doesn't have to be a quick question. Ask your whole question, sir.
Okay, fine. This is Dick. Yeah, thanks. My question was about the modulation mode or a C4FM. Does that mean continuous phase for frequency shift keying? Go ahead.
That's for you, Eric.
Now, the simplest thing you can do is just think of it as four carrier phase angle. But it's vector modulation if you want to know.
In other words, it's got some of the capability of a 16 qualm. In other words, you're changing amplitude and phase in order to fill up a constellation diagram, so to speak. Is that essentially the method of modulation? Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, if you want to visualize it as QPSK.
So, John, I wonder if you've gotten all the information you want on that one, John. W2VDH, K2LAW on the TechNet.
Okay, fine business. Yeah, I was confusing with FSK, so it is a form of phase shift keying. I guess quadraphase shift keying or 4PSK rather than 4-frequency shift keying. I think I got that. Okay, thanks.
Let me get a little bit of a clarification on this, Eric. Does the modulator have the ability to transmit specific phase at each point in time? I think the answer is yes. Is there any simultaneous amplitude modulation? Is it only angular modulation, or is it angular and amplitude modulation? KE2EJ, KE2LAW.
Unlike 8BSD, which is angular and amplitude, actually at the moment, there's no individual amplitude steps, it's just angular modulation. And from that, when you add trellis to it, you get symbols, that the message for each symbol you get 4 bits of data added.
Very good. John might have some further questions, and anyone else that wants to know anything about DMR, now's your time. Give me your call letters and name right now. K2RAW in the tech net.
Dick, I gotta leave you now, but I'll be back in about 20 minutes. K2RAW, KHSN.
Awful glad you were there tonight, Eric. By the way, you guys just heard another good example of how full duplex when running a net, how effective that is. I was about to go into a great big long discussion on the subject of phase lock loop, voltage controlled oscillator vulnerability. Eric cut in and let me know right away while I'm talking, hey, let's cut to the chase on this one. And so people who are running nets and don't want to run the full duplex mode, how they think they can survive nowadays without doing that, I'm kind of amazed. Let's see now. Freddie, you asked a darn good set of questions tonight. You got us on a non-good subject, awful glad you did. And when it comes to what you were subjected to, by that I mean Hurricane Superstorm Sandy, what was it like at Seeger Boulevard where you lived in Far Rockaway? Tell me what it was like when you went through Hurricane Sandy, Freddie. KB2VBN, K2LAW in the TechNet.
This is KB2VBN. Superstorm Sandy, a little crazy there. I hit the landmark repeater because I was in the city at the time. And then when I went back back to Rockaway, it took me a long time. When I got out to Rockaway, all the lights was out. I had a power station to try to plug up my radio and my cell phone. That thing was dead. The only thing that worked for me was my amateur radio. And the power lasted for 3 days without charging it, my HT. And that made me think a lot. You know, next time I'll be prepared.
Was your home damaged, Tammy? In other words, you had to go through water to get to your house, I'm guessing, to your place of residence. And your place of residence probably was without power for a few days. And you had to go through, you had to drive through areas of pretty significant devastation, I'm thinking. Give us a few words as to what living conditions were like in your neighborhood, Freddie. Maybe 2VBN, K2LAW in the TechNet.
So, Roger, I had some water coming down into my apartment because it flooded the basement. I'm on a low level. But it wasn't that bad. People down the block from me had it pretty worse. On the other blocks going down, all the houses were flooded. Blocks up from me, going towards Long Beach, they were all flooded. All the power was out. There was no lights out here. The street lights was out. People were driving erratically. I wasn't driving. I was in a van, trying to get here on the van that I had to pay $5 for. It was freezing out here. I was frostbitten. I had some books on it. I thought they were going to before I keep my feet warm, my feet were frozen. I got stranded out here. Matter of fact, the lights stayed off for about 6 days. So I got stranded out here, and I had to call out sick in my job. And it was a mess, man. You know, I said, wow. I mean, they was giving out MREs. It was the military. They was giving out MREs. I had a whole box of MREs. I put in my house. Multiple blankets from the Red Cross. Every time I go outside, I was bringing back food or blankets or water. It was all over the place. I could open up a store in my house.
Yeah, there are people who think that was a once per 50 year event or once per 100 year event. Although, because of global warming, those once per 50-year events are now happening every 5 years. People make a joke about that. Barry N2MB on Beach 43rd Street, he had something like 16 feet of water on his property up and down his block. The water came over the tops of the roofs of automobiles. And when that water gets inside of an automobile, it does havoc with the electronics. The lights turn on, the horn beeps, all kinds of crazy things happen. And in case of Barry's house, the water came crashing through the front window and floated his refrigerator up to the ceiling and floated his oil tank in the backyard down the street and so on. The bottom floor of his house became really devastated, and he's had to start living on the next higher floor of the house and while all those repairs are being made. So, my goodness, do we have water. I mean, Barry has had a foot or so of water on his property a few times every decade, but Hurricane Sandy multiplied that by a whole lot. And when you think of the millions of gallons of water that poured down into subways in Manhattan, another great big, very destructive event. So, and what do you do? Let me drop it. What can anybody do to prevent that is an interesting question. I mean, people have said that, well, the Dutch put up these great big movable dams out in the water to make sure that in the super high tides, their land is protected. Well, because their whole living environment is essentially below sea level, that's a big investment for them, which is worthwhile. For the New York City area to make a multi-billion dollar investment in kind of a seawall for something that's only required once every 50 years, and by the time the 50 years comes, it'll already be time to update the hardware, if you know what I mean. It'll be out of date. It's very hard to justify that kind of an expense. So the main subject we started off on with Freddie's very good question is DMR. One last call. Anyone else have any more DMR questions about the radios that you think you're going to be using in the future that you might want to buy? Give us your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet. Okay. And before we go over to the mailbag, anyone else have any other questions that they would like to ask the TechNet at this time? Give me your call letters. Any ham radio-like subject, give me your call letters right now and name the word yes, because you do have a question or a comment. K2RIW listening. Looks like everybody's away on the Memorial Day weekend, Labor Day weekend. I always mix the two up. This weekend. So, what kind of questions have we gotten this week, John, with reference to the mailbag? KC2WGB, our mailbag expert, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, ma'am.
Okay, Mr. Horse-mounted mobile, I think it was. Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, I just got a quick second here before the expert opens out of the store. I see if we can check out. I've been listening. I just wanted to wish you a happy Labor Day weekend, and a hello and goodbye. Yeah, very good answers to all the questions. Happy Labor Day to everybody in the net. This is WA2HMM in Selden, Long Island, New York. 73 all. Have a safe weekend.
Thanks an awful lot, Charlie. Charlie, in the last place that you and I worked, and you and I no longer work there, are most of our friends still there, even though there was another change of ownership of the corporation? Are most of our friends still there, or is there continuing to be change? I haven't had a chance to talk to anybody in the last 6 months. You're a little closer to it than I am. If you can, try to bring me up to speed a little bit. My favorite guys, the guys I work with, are they still there? WA2HMM, K2RIW in the TechNet.
WA2HMM. In all honesty, Dick, I have no idea. The last person I spoke with, well, actually, who I did some email transfers with, was Jay, and he was talking about Field Day, and in his email, he listed Jimmy, if you remember him, the big tall guy, Dominic, the guy with the pith helmet, and Dave, the guy that flies the plane. But that's the only people that I know about. Back to you.
Okay, that's good news. Jay, Jimmy, Dominic, and Dave, They're all ham radio operators working for the corporation. And I'm guessing the field day was going to be held in the company parking lot. That's a good sign. And I hope Mark is still there and all's going well with him. So was the field day going to be held in the company parking lot? That would be a good sign that things are pretty much the way they were when you and I left. Back to you, sir. K2LIW.
Affirmative on that, Dick. Affirmative. And by the way, in case anybody on the net here is looking to work some good DX, Chesterfield Island is coming up the beginning of October, and there's a couple other good ones coming up. You might want to check the ARRL DX bulletins. That's my input, Dick, and I got to run. The boss lady's coming out, and she's giving me the evil eye. Again, have a mighty fine holiday weekend and a safe one. WA2HMM, Selden, Long Island, New York.
I thank you, Charlie. Well done. Now it's time to go over to the mailbag. AC2WGB, K2RIW. You've got it, John.
AC2WGB. What do you mean, Dick? Everybody on the net? Paul's out there? Very good. Yeah, we've got a couple of questions. Let me let it drop. I'll go on to the first one. Okay, have a gentleman with a shortwave receiver. This came in the chat room, this question last week, but it came in too late for the net. He wants to hook up his shortwave receiver to an abandoned phone line. He thinks it's abandoned, and it's in this apartment. It's quite a bit of wiring, and there's four leads. I'd like to know if there's any danger to hooking that up to his radio and how he should go about that. What should he look out for? And is there any particular color wire he should pick? So back to you, Dick. Maybe you have some thoughts on that. KC2WGB.
Steve, you agree with the comments. Go right ahead, Al. Tell us, in the old days, we used to call it phone patching. I don't know what we call it nowadays, but in the old days, to really do it right, you had to have the right kind of a hybrid hookup, a kind of an isolation transformer, in order to do a good interfacing between landline and...
Dick, he wants to use it as an antenna.
Okay, all right. In that case, let's pass it over to Hal. K6DPZ, K2RAW, go ahead, Hal.
Okay, Dick. All right, the one thing you don't know is on those lines, so maybe a DC voltage, an AC voltage. So my only suggestion is take a 001 capacitor in series with your antenna wire and then go onto those lines. Pick the line that has the most sensitivity as far as background noise and signal, and you'll be safe. Don't connect the lines directly to your radio because there may be some voltages on those lines, and you don't want to have any chance of damaging your receiver. That's my only comment. That's a quickie.
Yeah, I thank you on that one, Hal. To use a phone line as an antenna, I'm a little skeptical of this one, because if that phone line is being used down your block, then the possibility exists that putting RF on it is going to really create interference to the telephones of your neighbors. Am I understanding correctly now? This is not Cat 5 cable we're talking about. This is really a twisted pair phone line that he's considering using as an antenna. Let me run that back to you, John, to make sure I've understood the question correctly. KC2WGB, K2LAW in the TechNet.
That's only a receiving antenna, not a transmitting antenna.
Oh, that makes it a lot better. Back to you, John. Bring me up to speed here. I was doing two things at once, and I didn't hear some of the details, as you can tell. You got it, John.
Okay, Dick, you got it basically right. He's going to use it on a shortwave receiver. He's not going to be transmitting on it. So he wants to hook it up as an antenna. He was questioning, does it make any difference which color lead? Or I would recommend try all of them if he's going to do it. But that's basically it. Only as receiving. Back to you, Dick. KC2WGB.
As I've said so often, receivers are amazingly forgiving. Obvious by the fact you can take an 8-10 meter receiver, tune it, let's say, to the 40 meter band, just pick up a random clip lead of wire that's laying on the bench and plug it into the center conductor of the antenna connector on the back of the radio, and you get beautiful reception. You you won't get as much signal strength indication. In other words, your signal strength meter, your S meter, is not going to ride as high. But most